This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hello, and welcome to The Discourse, a short-form, one-on-one interview podcast with filmmakers, actors, and other film industry folks, brought to you by The Playlist and hosted by myself, Mike D'Angelo. Today, I am digging into the weird, hairy, and wacky world of Dog Man. The film is the latest from director Luc Besson. It stars Caleb Landry Jones as Doug, a young, crippled, abandoned man, beaten down by a tough life, who has an almost supernatural connection to his canine companions. The film also stars Jojo T. Gibbs, Christopher Denham, and Grace Palma. Joining me to discuss the film is writer-director Luc Besson. You may know Luc Besson as the man behind films like Leon the Professional, The Fifth Element. He wrote Taken and the Transporter films, Valerian, Lucy, many, many more. We spend most of the time digging into Dog Man, which premiered at the Venice Film Festival to a standing ovation from the people in attendance and has since been met with very divisive reviews. Critics seem to either love it or hate it, and I've seen it twice now myself, partially because the movie is so nuts and all over the place that it's hard to digest after one sitting. I liked a lot about it. I think Caleb Landry Jones, who you may know from Get Out or X-Men First Class or Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri or Tunmore, he is 1,000% committed to the role of Doug, and that is a sight to behold in and of itself. So I think it's worth it just at least for him, but there are a lot more things that you could find interesting, amazing, controversial. There's a ton of stuff that we cover. Mr. Besson and I discuss, along with Dog Man, a bunch more stuff like Gary Oldman, The Fifth Element, his upcoming Dracula film, again with Caleb Landry Jones, his thoughts on Leon the Professional after Natalie Portman has come out and said she's kind of conflicted about the role in the film after all these years. Lots of topics covered in the 30 minutes that I had with him. Before I shoot you over to the interview, I've got to tell you that The Discourse is a part of the Playlist Podcast Network, which includes The Playlist Podcast, Binge-Worthy, Deep Focus, and more. We can be heard on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, wherever you find your favorite shows. Be sure to subscribe and drop us a comment or a rating, as we do very much appreciate it. Or head on over to theplaylist.net for film and TV news, reviews, interviews, and more. Okay, here is my chat with the lovely writer and director, Luc Besson. Besson, Mike D'Angelo with The Playlist. It's an absolute pleasure to talk to you today. I know you're a very busy man, so I appreciate you taking the time.
No, my pleasure.
No worries. Awesome. So I've seen Dog Man twice now. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Yes, watched it twice. Wow. I think it really warrants that, just because there's a lot you're digging into there. But congratulations on another winner. I really did enjoy it. Definitely want to dig in on that. But I always kind of, as a film lover, I like to kind of open things up by digging into movies that make you or made you fall in love with this in the first place. I mean, for example, The Fifth Element is definitely one of those for me. I absolutely adore that movie. I just revisited it on the 100-inch screen back here and thoroughly enjoy it. I think that one ages like a fine wine, but I'm wondering what kind of cracked you open at a young age? What made you fall in love with filmmaking and storytelling?
I didn't fall in love with movies, in fact, because my stepfather doesn't want to have TV at home. No music, no TV, 12 kilometers from the first city in the middle of the countryside. So believe me, when you're 14, you want to escape.
Absolutely.
And for me, the healthy way to escape was just to take a pen and write. And that was my way to escape. And I started writing The Fifth Element when I was 16.
Yeah.
Because when I open my window, I see cows. And then I say, oh my God, I dream like there's a flying cab who will come in front of my house, and then they will dig in the cab, and then we'll go in space. And that's how it starts. And it starts not as a movie, but as a book. So I wrote like 200 or 300 pages. It was shit, so I throw it. And then I write 400 again. And it was okay. And then I put it on the side and I revisit it once in a while. And when I get 30, I said, let's make a movie with it.
Why the hell not? And what a movie it was. I will say for the uninitiated, getting back to Dog Man, it and I hope you take this as a compliment, it is absolutely bonkers. There's a lot going on in the film. So I'm sincerely curious kind of where the germ of the idea for this movie started for you.
I read an article about this father who threw his kid, 4 years old, in a cage with dogs for 4 years. And I couldn't believe the article.
Mm.
I mean, I'm the father of five, and I don't know how twisted and sick you can be to do this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the real subject for me was, what happened to this kid? What you became after that? When your roots, your family, it's like the roots of a tree. You cut the roots, how the tree can stand up? You know, it's going to fall with the wind. So mm-hmm. I try to imagine what could happen to this guy. And basically, there's two ways. The one way, he can be a terrorist and kill everyone. And the other way is he could be Mother Teresa and use all this pain to try to do something with it. So the bad version is Joker.
Yeah.
Not on term of bad. I love the movie.
Sure. Yeah.
But, you know, the dark way of all this pain, the dark way is the Joker. And the light way, the hope, is Dog Man. Even if he looks like a monster at the beginning of the film, the guy is so good. It's almost like, I'm sorry to take this comparison, but everybody wants to take advantage of him. Everybody wants to hit him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like the life of Jesus, you know, like everyone is against him. He didn't kill anyone and he finished on the cross. And it's the same. He didn't kill anyone. You know, he just tried to survive. Or Elephant Man. Elephant Man is also a very good example. Like, everybody thinks he's a monster, but you realize that the monsters are around him. It's not him.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very interested by that. I think it's a, that the society today make us believe that every time you're different, oh, we have to take care of you because you're different. And in the reality, it's fake.
Yeah.
Most of the people who are different are rejected.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they're accepted, most of the people, they play, oh, yeah, I accept you. But deep inside, no, they don't. And that's the subject of the film for me.
And Doug's kind of connection to his dogs. I mean, it seems like you have a little bit of a barrier there, the way you consider, like, he didn't necessarily hurt anybody, but through the dogs, he kind of does. Do you feel like there's like a superpowered connection there in this film, or did you not really see it that way?
I think that the modern society, we lose most of our connection with the nature and the animal world. Like, animals can feel an earthquake almost 20 seconds before us. So we lost this connection. And because he is with this dog since he's a young kid, he kind of like reconnected himself with the animal and the nature. And so he understands them now. He really understands them and they understand him.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a kind of like superpower, but not on a Marvel point of view.
Right. Yeah. It's not like he's holding out his hand and like...
Yeah.
Yeah, making them do things.
Oh, come to me.
obviously, a lot hinges on whoever's going to play Doug in this movie. And Caleb Landry Jones is, I mean, he's always been a great character actor, but he really commits in all of his roles. And this one, it obviously no different. He's excellent. How much did you search for Doug versus did you have, you know, Caleb in mind for this?
No, what I knew since the beginning is if I can't find the right actor, I can't make a film.
Mm.
It's impossible. You need to have a pearl. You need to have an excellent actor who totally devoted to the film. And I didn't know Caleb. We met. I've seen a little picture. I remember him in different films. And I said, okay, let's meet the guy. Because you don't meet an actor. You make a partner. You can't make this movie just with an actor.
Yeah.
You need to team up with the guy. We need to be two, you know, very close. So my first three meetings with him was just about talking about life and everything, and just to see if we can sync together.
Mm-hmm.
And after three meetings, he said to his agent, I don't know what he wants because he never talk about movies. And then, so the last meeting, I finally asked the question. I said, Kellen, do you like dogs? And he said, yeah. He said, so maybe I have a script that I would love you to read. And he read it and he loved it. And then we go. And we prepped for 6 months. It was a long, long preparation.
Yeah. And obviously working with dogs is a whole animal unto itself.
There's 124 dogs every day.
Yeah, this isn't Air Bud where you're working with a couple of golden retrievers or whatever it is. Right. You're working with a lot of dogs.
Every kind, every species.
Yeah. You know,
like some were trained coming from Hollywood. Others came from France. And we have like 22 trainers. So it's a giant bordello all day. It's almost like the sea. Mm. You know, when you never know with the sea, you never know the wind, you never know the waves. You just have to deal with the sea. And there's this mass of spirits, all these dogs, they're all different. And you need time to know each other. You know, this one like this one. Okay, so let's put them together here. But this one is too big. Try putting in the front. I won't see the other one. So this one sleep all the time. Let's put it here. Then it will sleep. So you need to know. It's like organizing a family dinner at Christmas.
Oh, man.
And there's 80 people at the table, and you have to know who should go next to who, you know? And that was all day long. But that was fun. You go with it. Mm-hmm. You just go with it.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, getting back to your collaboration with Caleb, you guys are going to work together again. How is he to work with when it comes to collaboration? Does he come like super prepared with an idea in mind, or do you want it to kind of change on the day when you're on set and work together in that way?
No, on the day, no. But that's why the preparation was very long. And on the next one, preparation is long too.
Mm-hmm.
We just go pieces by pieces. You know, we see each other a lot and we talk and we walk and we have a lunch. And what about this? Oh, I got this idea. What do you think about this idea? Oh, yeah, I like it. But maybe at the end it should be more like this. And then we discuss and then we find little things or a way of saying a word or a smile or a gesture, you know, and we find little things. Say, oh, this is good. Well, when you do this, that's very good. Take it. And we build like ants, you know, little by little every day. So when we arrive the day of the shooting, we basically 95%, 96% ready. And we always keep, you know, a little door open in case a last minute idea arrived and we want to be open and say, yeah, okay, let's try this one too. But when we are on the set, we're really, really prepared, both of us.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell he's amazing in this. So I wouldn't be surprised to know he's a great collaborator. With all of the themes that this tackles, whether it's the religious elements or the human and animal rights elements or human emotional elements or the drag elements, you had to know that this one was probably going to be provocative or cause some divisiveness or whatever it is. And it certainly has with certain critics. You're no stranger to that at this point, yet I would wonder if you give it any consideration when you're writing or directing this. Do you think about pulling back for the sake of the audience or anything like this, or have you kind of gone away from that over the years?
Well, unfortunately, never. Since my first movie, since I'm 19 years old, because you cannot do that.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot say to Picasso, can you make the painting a little smaller because it won't go in my living room? And by the way, you don't work for people, you work for time.
Yeah.
I mean, the other day, I was in Korea, and there's this young guy, 15 years old, Korean, with a red mohawk. And he comes to me, and very aggressive, and he said, you know, my favorite movie is Subway, which is one of my first films.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, that's great. don't kill me. And I started to talk to the guy, and he was passionate by the film. And then I realized that he was not even born when I did the film.
Mm-hmm.
So you make the movie for the audience tomorrow, but you do the movie also for an audience in 5 years in China, 20 years in Iceland. The other day I took my kids and I showed them, not the other day, it was a few years ago, they were younger, and I showed them Charlie Chaplin.
Sure, yeah.
And they loved it. They loved it. And it's like 60, 70 years later. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. So, no, you cannot. I mean, if you start changing your creativity for the people from tomorrow, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, and free to the people. If they don't like it, they don't like it. That's okay. It's fun. Maybe someone 20 years will like it.
Right. You tend to focus on original projects, which hasn't been something that studios like to take risks on these days. Sometimes, you know, we're seeing more and more success with those kind of original ideas. But have you ever come close to because of the nature of that, writing or directing something based off of like an established IP? I know Valerian was a relatively known IP, but I'm wondering if, you know, there's possibly a Luc Besson's X-Men or Star Wars film that never got made or anything like that.
No, I never been in contact for that.
Okay.
And I'm open to everything. You know, James Bond, I love James Bond. Would you like to do it? Well, that would be fun. I was a huge, huge fan when I was 15, 16 of Star Wars. And I have the privilege to meet George Lucas a few times and love the guy. But things changed the last 15, 20 years or so. You know, which is interesting is before that, we let the power to the creative people because we like what they do. And sometimes they do something amazing and sometimes it's a flop.
Sure.
And the financial people, because they say, oh, we want the hit, but we don't want the flop. So we have to control that. And the more we go, the more they take control about that, which is the biggest mistake we can do for creativity, the biggest mistake, because they don't know. But what they do is they change most of the stories and say, no, we want a PG-13, you should pick up this. And then we have the ethnicity, so we have to take this and you have to take that. And all this, you know, and the only purpose of that is to secure, you know, maybe a better success, and 90% of the time, it's wrong. There's many movies at 200 million who were flops.
Absolutely.
And there's 200 people in the studio who greenlight the film. And sometimes a small film from a good director with a crazy idea, and so many amazing films were so hard to do, and it shouldn't be the case. No.
Yeah, you've had yourself plenty of those where it's, you know, a smaller film at first and then it just kind of blows up, either ones you're writing or ones you're directing. Whether it's, you know, I know the ones you've written, like the Taken or the Transporters or Columbiana, like those films saw a real life to them. Some, I mean, Taken obviously has multiple sequels and a TV spinoff, all this. How much ownership do you feel with when it comes to those, the ones that you've given away as a writing project versus films you've chosen to direct?
No, a movie belongs to a director. Yeah, I wrote Taken with Robert Kamen. We have fun writing it. I really like it. But when we give it to the director, he do his movie. We try to be in sync because there is a DNA in the film if we do a number two or three, so we want to keep the DNA. But like Taken, for example, I don't even go to the set. I let the guy. The rule with me is like, if you're tired, if you have a problem, and if you need me, call me. But there's only one captain on the boat.
No, that's probably great for the directors that end up, you know, getting these projects.
Believe me, the directors with me as a producer, they're very, very happy.
Yeah,
because I'm before the movie shoot, before the shooting, I was on the writing, the cast, and everything. And on the editing, mm-hmm. That's where I am. But between, it's your job.
Yeah. I have had the privilege of speaking with Gary Oldman a couple of times and telling him how much I adore the collaborations that you two have had. Always going so over the top, but never too far somehow with him. Do you look back on those collaborations, you know, fondly with Gary? How much do you keep in touch with him?
Well, Gary's a genius.
I love him.
He's a genius. So no question about it. It's pure pleasure working with him. And I hope we can work together again. But when we were doing The Fifth Element, he was shooting The Fifth Element and shooting his first movie as a director in the same time. That I produced. I produced the other one too. It was so free. So free. We just try. We go. What about this? Okay, let's try. And we were not like abusive. Like I was always on time, on budget. So we were not abusing any situation. It was just like we were there to try to do things to, oh, that's too much. Okay, let's go again. Let's go more. You know, like it was such a great period where at the time it was, I was working with Sony on these movies. And Mark Kenton was the head. And it's the time where the head of the studio just believed you. He bet on you. He said, you know, I love this guy. Let's make him, you know, let's him do his movie. Mm-hmm. And they have comments, you know, when we come with the first cut. And they say, oh, yeah, that's good. But what do you think about this? But it was pure. Because you don't receive like notes and pink paper under your door saying you have to change this and this and because the AI says something and that was real creation. So with Gary, it was just I can give you an anecdote of Leon. You know, he has a scene where he comes in the apartment of Matilda where he killed the father, and he's pretending playing piano on the chimney.
Yeah.
And he tried with Mozart, Beethoven, Mahler. He tried with everyone. And then after 20 takes, he come to me and he said, look, there is a problem. I said, no, why? It's, okay. It's 20 takes. And I said, oh, no. I have it since the third one. It's just the pleasure. Like,
yeah.
You know? So we did. And he said, oh, okay. All right. Okay. So we did that 25 takes. Because it was just like genius. Like he was, every take was different. So it was amazing.
And that's where the famous everyone, you know, take comes from.
It's funny because there's a couple of ideas that we find in the restaurant. Like, for example, the Beatles, when they did this,
yes.
We find it in the restaurant at dinner. We were like playing the scene and we find it like this. And the everyone, because the location where we were, I have a lot of eco. So after a few takes, I tell him, I said, when he asks you again, just scream as strong as you can. So he said this, he said that Jerry and everyone with this. And then it was, the eco was everywhere.
Wonderful. I really love the sci-fi projects you have done. Obviously, Fifth Element is a big one for me, but Lucy Valerian, you're a really great world builder. I know Valerian was kind of your big swing, which wasn't necessarily a commercial hit, but does that mean we're not necessarily in the U.S.?
The world was pretty good.
And I know, I think I saw that you said that you'd covered a lot of things before the film was shot, so you didn't have to make a certain... You know, you didn't have to like do budget and a half to be profitable when it came to that movie.
Well, we are equal with the movie. We didn't make money, but we didn't lose money. But I love it.
Yeah. So does that mean are we going to ever get another Luc Besson sci-fi kind of epic film, or do you not think that's in the future at this point?
Find me $200 million and one tomorrow.
I think I have it lying around somewhere.
No, I would love. I would love. You need a studio. You need a big studio to back you up, and everybody is scared right now. They're scared of everything, and that's too bad. But I would love.
Is that what you kind of learned on Valerian? Because you were basically an independent project there, right?
Yeah.
Never gonna probably do an independent feature that's that expensive again. Probably, is that what you're saying?
Well, you see the world where we are now, because you know Valerian is already 6-7 years ago.
Yeah, Jesus.
Today I think it's impossible. It's impossible. Either you find someone crazy, a rich person who say, I want to see the best sci-fi ever, and then you can do something. Either you win the lotto, you know, the lottery, or a head of a studio is smart enough or crazy enough to trust. Oh my God, I said the word, to trust. Trust the director, or to trust the creator and say, you know, I bet on you. Let's see, maybe he will lose, maybe he will win. But at the end of the day, the risk is the same. So,
sure. So a lot of the great like character storytelling that's going on right now is going on like these TV shows or streaming shows or whatever you want to call them. Is there any interest from you in like a long form kind of storytelling, or are you probably more sticking with films from here on out?
No, I'm interested by everything, and I'm curious by nature. But my distance as a runner, my distance is the long feature film.
Yeah,
that's my lens. So it doesn't mean I'm a long runner. You know, I can run a mile. So if you give me 100 meters, I'm not so good. If you give me 10 miles, I'm not good either. But no, I'm curious of everything, yeah, for sure.
For sure. Didn't you say at one point that you're like, I'm just going to do 10 films and out, kind of like Tarantino's doing? What changed for you when you got to like that 10th film? I think it was one of the Arthur films that would have been the 10th. What changed where you were like, no, I'm going
to
keep going?
No, what's funny is I said that to Tarantino a long time ago. So
yeah.
He copied.
Yeah.
No, I was honest when I said that. I said that after like 6 or 7 movies, and it was a way for me to concentrate myself, to say if I have only 10 bullets, I have to be careful with the last 3. Because at this time, Hollywood, there's lots of sirens, you know, like, come to me, you know, here's the script, you know, like, and it was, the project that they proposed to me was not bad, but that was sequels, and it was the Hollywood machine.
Yeah.
And with a lot of money, they propose you a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, I want to stay myself. I want to stay pure. So I need to find a way to resist to this siren, to these mermaids. And the way I find was say, okay, I'm going to do 10. So if I have 2 more films, I can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
I have to do something, you know, more like the one I want. And when I finally did the 10th, I stopped for a while, but I was still writing like 4 or 5 scripts per year.
Yeah.
So I said, God, it's like, it's. So I said, maybe I should do 1 or 2 more because I still have a lot. Now I can tell you I'm going to do 3 and then I stop.
Oh, yeah. So we're done after 3 here. So is Dracula one of those movies?
Yeah.
Nice.
So after Dracula, there's 2.
Okay.
I don't bother you after that. I stop.
Now, do you have those 2 picked out? Or yeah. Are those kind of, oh, wow, okay. Are you able to say, or you're not wanting to uncover this?
No.
Point? Okay. So with Dracula, is that the next one?
Dracula. I started shooting already.
You started shooting? Wow. Okay. So what is this, adhering to the Bram Stoker tale, or what else? Are you going to do something else with it?
No. It comes from Bram Stoker, but the vision for me is a love tale.
Mm-hmm. A love story between like Dracula and someone else, or is it a love story like between maybe
with his princess,
mm-hmm.
like in the book?
And Caleb still playing that part?
You will see soon.
I will see soon. Fair enough. I know at one point Lucy 2 was kind of in the pipeline. Is that dead, or is that?
I heard that. I even read that.
Yeah,
I was glad to hear. I said, "Oh, give me the script."
Oh wait, I gotta write the script.
No, that's the problem sometimes with internet is, you know, like information. I don't know where it comes from. Sometimes I see that my name is on the movie. I'm not even aware of the film.
Sure. So you just kind of own the characters, that kind of thing, and they didn't really consult, that kind of thing?
Yeah, no, Lucy, first one was good. So
yeah, I'm a fan of it too. But yeah, I mean, if you're not involved, obviously it's a different thing. In preparing for the interview, I went on like a Luc Besson marathon, basically, which I love to do if I have the time. And I revisited a bunch of your films, and I'm flipping through my phone as I'm researching some of them, and I'm revisiting The Professional, Leon the Professional, especially after seeing Natalie Portman had said recently that she was kind of conflicted with her relationship with the film and maybe the sexual nature of her character. I'm wondering how you look back on not only that, just, you know, your earlier films. Do you look back and go, maybe I wouldn't have done that? Or do you just think, nah, there's no point in doing that?
Are you the same at 19 years old, at 25, at 35?
Right.
You know, I mean, I started my first short film. My first short film, I'm 17. My parents divorced. They put me on boarding school. I have no education. I'm living at 60 kilometers from Paris. I'm a Russian. You know, I know nothing about life. I know nothing about love. I know nothing about anything. And I'm just in love with movies. So, and then you learn, and then you go to different countries, and then you start speaking English, and you meet great people, and you evolute, and you fall in love, and then you break your heart, and then you fall in love again, and then you have a child, and in the normal life. So you go with the society the way it is at the moment it is, you know. Mm-hmm. So we can always, you know, criticize. It's very hard for me to have a vision of like 30, 40, 50 years ago. What's the point? Like, I don't understand. You know, like things change, thanks God. Lots of things change or much better. Few things are worse. And that's the society we live in. And then we have to adapt. And we adapt always, all the time. I'm not the same today at 65, for sure. I have five kids. So, and I was left alone from zero to basically 14.
So there's a little bit of that in Dog Man that you're kind of talking about there.
Because you're revisiting some of the movies, it's a little bit of that in all my movies. You know, Big Blue is the same. The guy is born on Earth by hazard. It should be a dolphin.
Yeah. Well, they are giving me the wrap here. I will just say for the people listening that Dogman hits select theaters on March 29th before expanding nationwide on April 6th. Mr. Besson, again, thank you for the time. I really appreciate it.
You're really welcome. Thank you, sir.
All right. Have a good one.